Not as long as you guys have that bond. I was surprised he'd brought this up. I honestly suspected that there were two reasons he and I argued a lot. One was that we both had personalities that liked to argue. The other reason, the big one, was that we were each envious of the other's relationship with Lyssa. But, as he said, we really had the same motives. We cared about her. And I don't think the bond will keep you guys apart, I said. I knew the link bothered him. How could you ever get romantically close to someone when they had that kind of connection with another person? Even if that other person was just a friend. She cares about you. I couldn't bring myself to say loves. She has a whole separate place for you in her heart. Christian put his dish in the oven.
You did not just say that. I have a feeling we're on the verge of hugging and coming up with cute nicknames for each other.
He was trying to look disgusted at my sentiment, but I could tell he liked being told that Lyssa cared about him. I already have a nickname for you, but I'll get in trouble if I say it in class.
Ah, he said happily.
That's the rose I know.
He went off to talk to another friend while his meatloaf cooked, which was probably just as well. My door was a vulnerable position, and I shouldn't have been chatting away, even if the rest of the class was. Across the room, I saw Jesse and Ralph working together. Like Christian, they'd chosen a blow-off class, too. No attacks occurred, but a guardian named Dustin did come in to make notes on us novices as we held our positions. He was standing near me right when Jesse chose to stroll by. At first, I thought it was a coincidence, until Jesse spoke.
I take back what I said earlier, Rose. I figured it out. You aren't upset because of Lyssa or Christian. You're upset because the rules say you have to be with a student, and Adrian Ivashkov's too old. The way I hear it, you guys already had a lot of practice watching each other's bodies.
That joke could have been so much funnier, but I'd learned not to expect too much from Jesse. I knew for a fact that he didn't care about Adrian and me. I also suspected he didn't believe we had anything going on. But Jesse was still bitter about me threatening him earlier, and here was his chance to get back at me. Dustin, standing within earshot, had no interest in Jesse's idiotic teasing. Dustin would probably have an interest, however, if I slammed Jesse's face into the wall. That didn't mean I had to be silent, though. Guardians talk to Maroy all the time. They just tended to be respectful and still keep an eye on their surroundings. So I gave Jesse a small smile and simply said, "Your wit is always such a delight, Mr. Zeklos. I can barely contain myself around it." I then turned away and surveyed the rest of the room. When Jesse realized I wasn't going to do anything else, he laughed and walked away, apparently thinking he'd won some great victory. Dustin left shortly thereafter.
"Asshole," muttered Christian, returning to his station.
Class had about 5 minutes left. My eyes followed Jesse across the room. "You know something, Christian? I'm pretty happy to be guarding you."
"If you're comparing me to Zeklos, I really don't take that as much of a compliment. But here, try this. Then you'll really be glad you're with me."
His masterpiece was finished, and he gave me a piece. I hadn't realized it, but just before the meatloaf had gone in, he'd wrapped it in bacon. "Good God," I said. "This is the most stereotypical vampire food ever."
"Only if it was raw. What do you think?"
"It's good," I said reluctantly. Who knew that bacon would make all the difference? "Really good. I think you have a promising future as a housewife while Lyssa works and makes millions of dollars."
"Funny. That's exactly my dream."
We left the class in lighter moods. Things had grown more friendly between us, and I decided I could handle the next 6 weeks protecting him. He and Lyssa were going to meet in the library to study, or pretend to study, but he had to stop by his dorm first. So I followed him across the quad, back into the winter air that had grown chillier since sunset 7 hours ago. The snow on the paths, which had turned slushy in the sun, had now frozen up and made walking treacherous. Along the way, we were joined by Brandon Lazar, a Maroi who lived in Christian's Hall. Brandon could barely contain himself, recapping a fight he'd witnessed in his math class. We listened to his rendition, all of us laughing at the thought of Alberta sneaking in through the window. "Hey, she might be old, but she could take on almost any of us," I told them. I gave Brandon a puzzled look. He had bruises and red splotches on his face. He also had a few weird welts near his ear. "What happened to you? Have you been fighting guardians, too?" His smile promptly disappeared, and he looked away from me.
"Nah, I just fell."
"Come on," I said. "Maroi might not train to fight like Dampiers did, but they got in brawls with each other just as often as anyone else." I tried to think of any Maroi he might have a conflict with. For the most part, Brandon was pretty likable.
"That's the lamest, most unoriginal excuse in the world."
"It's true," he said, still avoiding my eyes.
"If someone's screwing with you, I can give you a few pointers." He turned back to me, locking eyes.
"Just let it go."
He wasn't hostile or anything, but there was a firm note in his voice. It was almost like he believed saying the words alone would make me obey him.
I chuckled. "What are you trying to do? Compel me?"
Suddenly, I saw movement on my left. A slight shadow blending in with the dark shapes of a cluster of snowy pine trees, but moving just enough to catch my attention. Stan's face emerged from the darkness as he sprang toward us. Finally, my first test. Adrenaline shot through me just as strongly as if a real Strigoi were approaching. I reacted instantly, reaching out to grab both Brandon and Christian. That was always the first move, to throw my own life before theirs. I jerked the two guys to a halt and turned toward my attacker, reaching for my stake in order to defend the Maroi. And that's when he appeared. Mason. He stood several feet in front of me, off to Stan's right, looking just as he had last night. Translucent. Shimmering. Sad. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. I froze, unable to move or finish going for my stake. I forgot about what I'd been doing and completely lost track of the people and commotion around me. The world slowed down, everything fading around me. There was only Mason, that ghostly, shimmering Mason who glowed in the dark and seemed like he so badly wanted to tell me something. The same feeling of helplessness I'd experienced in Spokane returned to me. I hadn't been able to help him then. I couldn't help him now. My stomach turned cold and hollow. I could do nothing except stand there, wondering what he was trying to say. He lifted one translucent hand and pointed off toward the other side of campus. But I didn't know what it meant. There was so much over there, and it wasn't clear what he was pointing at. I shook my head, not understanding, but desperately wishing I could. The sorrow on his face seemed to grow. Suddenly, something slammed into my shoulder, and I stumbled forward. The world suddenly started up again, snapping me out of the dreamy state I'd just been in. I only barely managed to throw out my hands in time to stop myself from hitting the ground. I looked up and saw Stan standing over me.
"Hathaway," he barked, "what are you doing?"
I blinked, still trying to shake off the weirdness of seeing Mason again. I felt sluggish and dazed. I looked into Stan's angry face and then glanced over at where Mason had been. He was gone. I turned my attention back to Stan and realized what had happened. In my distraction, I'd completely spaced while he'd staged his attack. He now had one arm around Christian's neck and one around Brandon's. He wasn't hurting them, but his point was made.
"If I had been a Strigoi,"
he growled. These two would be dead.
Chapter 5. Most disciplinary issues at the academy went to headmistress Kirova. She oversaw Moroi and Dampier's alike and was known for her creative and oft-used repertoire of punishments. She wasn't cruel, exactly, but she wasn't soft, either. She simply took student behavior seriously and dealt with it as she saw fit. There were some issues, however, that were beyond her jurisdiction. The school's guardians calling together a disciplinary committee wasn't unheard of, but it was very, very rare. You had to do something pretty serious to piss them off to get that sort of response, like, say, willfully endangering a Moroi, or hypothetically willfully endangering a Moroi. "For the last time," I growled. "I didn't do it on purpose." I sat in one of the guardians' meeting rooms, facing my committee. Alberta, Emile, and one of the other rare female guardians on campus, Celeste. They sat at a long table, looking imposing, while I sat in a single chair and felt very vulnerable. Several other guardians were sitting in and watching, but thankfully, none of my classmates were there to see this humiliation. Dimitri was among the watchers. He was not on the committee, and I wondered if they'd kept him off because of his potentially biased role as my mentor. "Miss Hathaway," said Alberta, fully in her strict captain mode. "You must know why we have a hard time believing that." Celeste nodded. "Guardian Alto saw you. You refused to protect two Moroi, including the one whose protection you were specifically assigned to."
"I didn't refuse," I exclaimed. "I fumbled."
"That wasn't a fumble,"
said Stan from the Watchers. He glanced at Alberta for permission to speak.
"May I?"
She nodded, and he turned back to me.
"If you'd blocked or attacked me and then messed up, that would be a fumble. But you didn't block, you didn't attack, you didn't even try. You just stood there like a statue and did nothing."
Understandably, I was outraged. The thought that I would purposefully leave Christian and Brandon to be killed by a Strigoi was ridiculous. But what could I do? I either confessed to screwing up majorly or to having seen a ghost. Neither option was appealing, but I had to cut my losses. One made me look incompetent. The other made me look insane. I didn't want to be associated with either of those. I much preferred my usual description of reckless and disruptive.
"Why am I getting in trouble for messing up?" I asked tightly.
"I mean, I saw Ryan mess up earlier. He didn't get in trouble. Isn't that the point of this whole exercise? Practice? If we were perfect, you'd already have unleashed us upon the world."
"Weren't you listening?"
said Stan. I swore I could see a vein throbbing in his forehead. I think he was the only one there as upset as I was. At the very least, he was the only one, aside from me, showing his emotions. The others were poker faces. But then, none of them had witnessed what had happened. If I'd been in Stan's place, I might have thought the worst of me, too.
"You didn't mess up because messing up implies that you actually have to do something."
"Okay, then. I froze."
I looked at him defiantly.
"Does that count as messing up? I cracked under the pressure and blanked out. It turns out I wasn't prepared. The moment came, and I panicked. It happens to novices all the time."
"To a novice who has already killed Strigoi?"
asked Emil. He was from Romania, his accent a bit thicker than Dimitri's Russian one. It wasn't nearly as nice, though.
"It seems unlikely."
I dealt out glares to him and everyone else in the room.
"Oh, I see. After one incident, I'm now expected to be an expert Strigoi killer? I can't panic or be afraid of anything? Makes sense. Thanks, guys. Fair. Real fair."
I slumped back in my seat,
arms crossed over my chest. There was no need to fake bitchy defiance. I had plenty of it to dish out.
Alberta sighed and leaned forward.
We're arguing semantics. Technicalities aren't the point here. What's important is that this morning, you made it very clear you did not want to guard Christian Ozera. In fact, I think you even said you wanted us to be sure we knew that you were doing it against your will, and that we'd soon see what a horrible idea it was.
Ugh, I had said that. Honestly, what had I been thinking?
And then, when your first test comes around, we find you completely and utterly unresponsive.
I nearly flew out of my chair. That's what this is about? You think I didn't protect him because of some kind of weird revenge thing?
All three of them stared at me expectantly. You aren't exactly known for calmly and gracefully accepting things you don't like, she replied wryly. This time, I did stand up, pointing my finger at her accusingly.
Not true. I have followed every rule Kirova laid down for me since coming back here. I've gone to every practice and obeyed every curfew. Well, I'd fudge some of the curfews, but not willfully. It had always been for the greater good. There's no reason I'd do this as some kind of revenge. What good would it do? Guardian Alto wasn't going to really hurt Christian, so it's not like I'd get to see him punched or anything. The only thing I would accomplish is getting dragged into the middle of something like this and possibly facing removal from the field experience.
You are facing removal from the field experience, replied Celeste flatly.
Oh.
I sat down, suddenly not feeling as bold. Silence hung in the room for several moments, and then I heard Dimitri's voice speak from behind me.
She has a point, he said. My heart thumped loudly in my chest.
Dimitri knew I wouldn't take revenge like that. He didn't think I was petty.
If she were going to protest or take revenge, she'd do it in a different way.
Well, not too petty, at least.
Celeste frowned. Yes, but after the scene she made this morning... Dimitri took a few steps forward and stood beside my chair. Having his solid presence nearby comforted me. I had a flash of déjà vu, back to when Lissa and I had returned to the academy last autumn. Headmistress Kirova had nearly expelled me, and Dimitri had stood up for me then, too.
This is all circumstantial, he said. Regardless of how suspicious you think it looks, there's no proof. Removing her from the experience, and essentially ruining her graduation, is a bit extreme without any certainties.
The committee looked thoughtful, and I focused my attention on Alberta. She had the most power here. I'd always liked her, and in our time together, she'd been strict but always scrupulously fair. I hoped that would still hold true. She beckoned Celeste and Emile toward her, and the other two guardians leaned closer. They had a whispered conference. Alberta gave a resigned nod, and the others leaned back.
Miss Hathaway, do you have anything you'd like to say before we tell you our conclusions?
That I'd like to say? Hell yeah, there were tons of things. I wanted to say that I wasn't incompetent. I wanted to tell them that I was one of the best novices here. I wanted to tell them that I had seen Stan coming and had been on the verge of reacting. I especially wanted to tell them that I didn't want to have this mark on my record. Even if I stayed in the field experience, I'd essentially have an F for this first test. It would affect my overall grade, which could subsequently affect my future. But again, what choice did I have? Tell them that I'd seen a ghost? The ghost of a guy who'd had a major crush on me and who'd had quite likely died because of that crush? I still didn't know what was going on with these sightings. One time I could write off to exhaustion, but I'd seen him, or it, twice now. Was he real? My higher reasoning said no, but honestly, It didn't matter at the moment. If he was real and I told them, they'd think I was crazy. If he wasn't real and I told them, they'd think I was crazy, and they'd be right. I couldn't win here.
No, Guardian Petrov, I said, hoping I sounded meek. Nothing more to add.
All right, she said wearily. Here's what we've decided. You're lucky you have Guardian Belikov to advocate for you, or this decision might have been different. We're giving you the benefit of the doubt. You'll go on with the field experience and continue to guard Mr. Ozera. You'll just be on a probation of sorts.
That's okay, I said. I'd been on probation for most of my academic life.
Thank you.
And, she added,
uh-oh.
Because the suspicion isn't entirely removed, you'll be spending your day off this week doing community service.
I jumped out of my chair again.
What?
Dimitri's hand wrapped around my wrist, his fingers warm and controlling.
Sit down, he murmured in my ear, tugging me toward the chair. Take what you can get.
If that's a problem, we can make it next week, too, warned Celeste, and the next five after that. I sat down and shook my head. I'm sorry, thank you. The hearing dispersed, and I was left feeling weary and beaten. Had only one day gone by? Surely the happy excitement I'd felt before the field experience had been weeks ago and not this morning. Alberta told me to go find Christian, but Dimitri asked if he could have some alone time with me. She agreed, no doubt hoping he'd set me on the straight and narrow. The room emptied, and I thought he'd sit and talk to me then and there. But instead, he walked over to a small table that held a water dispenser, coffee, and other beverages.
You want some hot chocolate? He asked.
I hadn't expected that.
Sure. He dumped 4 packets of instant hot chocolate into 2 styrofoam cups and then added hot water.
Doubling is the secret, he said when the cups were full.
He handed me mine, along with a wooden stirrer, and then walked toward a side door. Presuming I was supposed to follow him, I scurried to catch up without spilling my hot chocolate.
Where are we? Oh.
I stepped through the doorway and found myself in a little glass-enclosed porch filled with small patio tables. I'd had no idea this porch was adjacent to the meeting room, but then this was the building the Guardians conducted all campus business out of. Novices were rarely allowed. I also hadn't realized the building was built around a small courtyard, which was what this porch looked out to. In the summer, I imagined one could open the windows and be surrounded in greenery and warm air. Now, encased in glass and frost, I felt like I was in some kind of ice palace. Dimitri swept his hand over a chair, brushing off dust. I did the same and sat down opposite him. Apparently, this room didn't see a lot of use in the winter. Because it was enclosed, the room was warmer than outdoors, but it wasn't heated otherwise. The air felt chilly, and I warmed my hands on my cup. Silence fell between Dimitri and me. The only noise came from me blowing on my hot chocolate. He drank his right away. He'd been killing Strigoi for years. What was a little scalding water here and there? As we sat and the quiet grew, I studied him over the edge of my cup. He wasn't looking at me, but I knew he knew I was watching. Like every other time I looked at him, I was always struck by his looks first. The soft, dark hair that he often tucked behind his ears without realizing it, hair that never quite wanted to stay in its tie at the back of his neck. His eyes were brown, too. Somehow gentle and fierce at the same time. His lips had that same contradictory quality, I realized. When he was fighting or dealing with something grim, those lips would flatten and turn hard. But in lighter times, when he laughed or kissed, well, then they'd become soft and wonderful.
Today, more than his exterior hit me, I felt warm and safe just being with him. He brought comfort after my terrible day. So often with other people, I felt a need to be the center of attention, to be funny and always have something clever to say. It was a habit I needed to shake to be a guardian, seeing as that job required so much silence. But with Dimitri, I never felt like I had to be anything more than what I already was. I didn't have to entertain him, or think up jokes, or even flirt. It was enough to just be together, to be so completely comfortable in each other's presence. Smoldering sexual tension aside, that we lost all sense of self-consciousness. I exhaled and drank my cocoa. "What happened out there?" he asked at last, meeting my gaze. "You didn't crack under the pressure." His voice was curious, not accusatory. He wasn't treating me as a student right now, I realized. He was regarding me as an equal. He simply wanted to know what was going on with me. There was no discipline or lecturing here. And that just made it all the worse when I had to lie to him. "Of course it was," I told him, looking down into my cup. "Unless you believe I really did let Stan attack Christian." "No," he said. "I don't believe that. I never did. I knew you'd be unhappy when you found out about the assignments, but I never once doubted that you'd do what you'd have to for this. I knew you wouldn't let your personal feelings get in the way of your duty." I looked up again and met his eyes, so full of faith and absolute confidence in me. "I didn't. I was mad, still am a little. But once I said I'd do it, I meant it. And after spending some time with him, well, I don't hate him. I actually think he's good for Lyssa, and he cares about her, so I can't get upset about that. He and I just clash sometimes, that's all. But we did really well together against the Strigoi. I remembered that while I was with him today, and arguing against this assignment just seemed stupid. So I decided to do the best job I could." I hadn't meant to talk so much, but it felt good to let out what was inside of me, and the look on Dimitri's face would have gotten me to say anything. Almost anything. "What happened then?" he asked. "With Stan?" I averted my eyes and played with my cup again. I hated keeping things from him, but I couldn't tell him about this. In the human world, vampires and dampiers were creatures of myth and legend, bedtime stories to scare children. Humans didn't know we were real and walking the earth. But just because we were real didn't mean that every other storytime paranormal creature was. We knew that and had our own myths and bedtime stories about things we didn't believe in. Werewolves, boogeymen, ghosts. Ghosts played no real role in our culture, short of being fodder for pranks and campfire tales. Ghosts inevitably came up on Halloween, and some legends endured over the years. But in real life, no ghosts. If you came back after death, it was because you were a Strigoi. At least, that's what I'd always been taught. I honestly didn't know enough now to say what was going on. Me imagining Mason seemed more likely than him being a true ghost. But man, that meant I might seriously be heading into crazy territory. All this time, I'd been worried about Lyssa losing it. Who had known it might be me? Dimitri was still watching me, waiting for an answer. "I don't know what happened out there. My intentions were good. I just messed up."
"Rose, you're a terrible liar."
I glanced up. "No, I'm not. I've told a lot of good lies in my life. People have believed them." He smiled slightly.
"I'm sure. But it doesn't work with me. For one thing, you won't look me in the eye. As for the other, I don't know, I can just tell."
Damn, he could tell. He just knew me that well. I stood up and moved to the door, keeping my back to him. Normally, I treasured every minute with him, but I couldn't stick around today. I hated lying, but I didn't want to tell the truth either. I had to leave. Look, I appreciate you being worried about me, but really, it's okay. I just messed up. I'm embarrassed about it, and I'm sorry I put your awesome training to shame, but I'll rebound. Next time, Stan's ass is mine. I hadn't even heard him get up, but suddenly, Dimitri was right behind me. He placed a hand on my shoulder, and I froze in front of the door leading out. He didn't touch me anywhere else. He didn't try to pull me closer. But oh, that one hand on my shoulder held all the power in the world. "Rose," he said, and I knew he was no longer smiling. "I don't know why you're lying, but I know you wouldn't do it without a good reason. And if there's something wrong, something you're afraid to tell the others..." I spun around rapidly, somehow managing to pivot in place in such a way that his hand never moved, yet ended up on my other shoulder. "I'm not afraid," I cried. "I do have my reasons, and believe me, what happened with Stan was nothing. Really, all of this is just something stupid that got blown out of proportion. Don't feel sorry for me or feel like you have to do anything. What happened sucks, but I'll just roll with it and take the black mark. I'll take care of everything. I'll take care of me." It took all of my strength just then not to shake. How had this day gotten so bizarre and out of control? Dimitri didn't say anything. He just looked down at me, and the expression on his face was one I'd never seen before. I couldn't interpret it. Was he mad? Disapproving? I just couldn't tell. The fingers on my shoulder tightened slightly and then relaxed. "You don't have to do this alone," he said at last. He sounded almost wistful, which made no sense. He was the one who'd been telling me for so long that I needed to be strong. I wanted to throw myself into his arms just then, but I knew I couldn't. I couldn't help a smile. "You say that, but tell me the truth. Do you go running to others when you have problems?" "That's not the same. Answer the question, comrade." "Don't call me that."
"And don't avoid the question either."
"No," he said. "I try to deal with my problems on my own."
I slipped away from his hand. "See?
But you have a lot of people in your life you can trust. People who care about you. That changes things."
I looked at him in surprise. "You don't have people who care about you?"
He frowned, obviously rethinking his words. "Well, I've always had good people in my life, and there have been people who cared about me, but that doesn't necessarily mean I could trust them or tell them everything."
I was often so distracted by the weirdness of our relationship that I rarely thought about Dimitri as someone with a life away from me. He was respected by everyone on campus. Teachers and students alike knew him as one of the deadliest guardians here. Whenever we ran into guardians from outside the school, they always seemed to know and respect him, too. But I couldn't recall ever having seen him in any sort of social setting. He didn't appear to have any close friends among the other guardians, just co-workers he liked. The friendliest I'd ever seen him get with someone had been when Christian's aunt, Tasha Ozera, visited. They'd known each other for a long time, but even that hadn't been enough for Dimitri to pursue once her visit was over. Dimitri was alone an awful lot, I realized, content to hole up with his cowboy novels when not working. I felt alone a lot, but in truth, I was almost always surrounded by people. With him being my teacher, I tended to view things as one-sided. He was the one always giving me something, be it advice or instruction. But I gave him something, too, something harder to define, a connection with another person. Do you trust me? I asked him.
The hesitation was brief. Yes.
Then trust me now, and don't worry about me just this once.
I stepped away, out of the reach of his arm, and he didn't say anything more or try to stop me. Cutting through the room that I'd had the hearing in, I headed for the building's main exit, tossing the remnants of my hot chocolate in a garbage can as I walked past.
Chapter 6.
There had only been 3 other witnesses to what had happened out on the quad, yet unsurprisingly, everyone seemed to know about it when I returned to the commons later on. Classes were done, but plenty of students moved about in the corridors, off to study or retake tests or whatever. They tried to hide their glances and whispers, but they didn't do a very good job. Those who made eye contact with me either gave me tight-lipped smiles or immediately looked away. Wonderful. With no psychic link to Christian, I had no clue where to find him. I could sense that Lyssa was in the library and figured that that would be a good place to start looking. On my way there, I heard a guy's voice call out behind me.
Took things a bit too far, didn't you?
I turned around and saw Ryan and Camille walking several steps back. If I'd been a guy, the appropriate response would have been, "You mean with your mom?" Because I was not a guy, though, and because I had manners, I just said,
"Don't know what you're talking about."
Ryan hurried to catch up with me.
"You know exactly what I mean. With Christian. I heard that when Stan attacked, you were just like, 'Here, take him,' and walked away."
"Oh, good God," I groaned. "It was bad enough when everyone was talking about you, but why did the stories always end up changing?"
"That's not what happened." "Oh, yeah?" he asked. "Then why did you get called in to see Alberta?"
"Look," I said, not feeling so well-mannered anymore. "I just messed up the attack, you know, kind of like you did earlier when you weren't paying attention in the hall."
"Hey," he said, flushing slightly. "I ended up getting in on that. I did my part."
"Is that what they're calling getting killed nowadays?"
"At least I wasn't a whiny bitch who refused to fight."
I had just about calmed down after speaking with Dimitri, but now my temper was rising already. It was like a thermometer ready to burst. "You know, maybe instead of criticizing others, you should pay more attention to your own guardian duties." I nodded toward Camille. She had thus far been quiet, but her face showed me she was eating all of this up. Brian shrugged.
"I can do both. Shane's farther behind us, and the area ahead is clear. No doors. Pff, easy."
He patted Camille's shoulder.
"She's safe."
"It's an easy place to secure. You wouldn't do so well in the real world with real Strigoi." His smile faded. Anger glinted in his eyes.
"Right. The way I hear it, you didn't do such a great job out there either. At least not as far as Mason was concerned."
Taunting over what had happened with Stan and Christian was one thing, but implying that I was at fault for Mason's death? Unacceptable. I was the one who'd kept Lyssa safe for 2 years in the human world. I was the one who had killed 2 Strigoi in Spokane. I was the only novice at this school with Molnia marks, the little tattoos given to guardians to mark Strigoi kills. I'd known there had been some whispers about what had happened to Mason, but no one had ever actually said anything to me. The thought of Ryan or anyone else thinking I was to blame for Mason dying was too much. I blamed myself plenty enough already without their help. The thermometer broke. In one smooth motion, I reached past him, grabbed Camille, and swung her up against the wall. I hadn't thrown her hard enough to hurt her, but she was clearly startled. Her eyes widened in shock, and I used my forearm to pin her, pressing it against her throat.
"What are you doing?"
exclaimed Ryan, peering back and forth between our faces. I shifted my stance slightly, still keeping the pressure on Camille.
"Furthering your education," I said pleasantly. "Sometimes places aren't as easy to secure as you think.
You're crazy. You can't hurt him, Maroi. If the Guardians find out...
I'm not, I argued. I glanced toward her. Am I hurting you? Are you in extreme pain?
There was a hesitation. Then she gave as much of a shake of her head as she could manage.
Are you uncomfortable?
A small nod.
See? I told Ryan. Discomfort isn't the same thing as pain.
You're insane. Let her go.
I'm not done, Rye. Pay attention, because here's the point. Danger can come from anywhere, not just Strigoi, or Guardians dressed up like Strigoi. Keep acting like an arrogant asshole who thinks he knows everything?
I pressed my arm in a little harder, still not enough to affect her breathing or cause real pain.
And you miss things. And those things can kill your Maroi.
Okay, okay, whatever, please stop it, he said.
His voice wavered. There was no more attitude.
You're scaring her.
I'd be scared, too, if my life was in your hands.
The scent of cloves alerted me to Adrian's presence. I also knew that Shane and a few others had come to watch. The other novices looked uncertain, like they wanted to pry me off but were afraid of getting Camille hurt. I knew I should let her go, but Ryan had just made me so angry. I needed to prove a point to him. I needed to get him back. And really, I didn't even feel sorry for Camille either, since I was sure she'd done her fair share of gossiping about me, too.
This is fascinating, said Adrian, his voice as lazy as usual. But I think you've made your point.
I don't know, I said. The tone of my voice managed to be both sweet and menacing at the same time. I still don't think Ryan gets it.
For God's sake, Rose, I get it, cried Ryan. Just let her go.
Adrian moved around me, going over to stand beside Camille. She and I were pressed close together, but he managed to squeeze in so that his face was in my line of sight, almost beside hers. He wore that goofy smirk he normally had, but there was something serious in his dark green eyes.
Yes, little Dampier. Let her go. You're done here.
I wanted to tell Adrian to get away from me, that I would be the one to say when this was finished. Somehow, I couldn't get the words out. A part of me was enraged at his interference. The other part of me thought he sounded reasonable.
Let her go, he repeated.
My eyes were all over Adrian now, not Camille. Suddenly, all of me decided he sounded reasonable. Completely reasonable. I needed to let her go. I moved my arm and stepped away. With a gulp, Camille darted behind Ryan, using him like a shield. I saw now that she was on the verge of tears. Ryan simply looked stunned. Adrian straightened up and made a dismissive gesture toward Ryan.
I'd get out of here before you really annoy Rose.
Ryan, Camille, and the others slowly backed off from us. Adrian put his arm around me and hurried me away toward the library. I felt weird, kind of like I was waking up. But then, with each step, things grew clearer and clearer. I pushed his arm off me and jerked away.
You just used compulsion on me, I exclaimed. You made me let her go.
Someone needed to. You looked like you were seconds away from strangling her.
I wasn't, and I wouldn't have.
I pushed open the library door.
You had no right to do that to me. No right at all.
Compulsion, making people do what you wanted, was a skill all vampires had to a very small degree. Using it was considered immoral, and most couldn't control it well enough to do any real damage. Spirit strengthened the ability, however, making both Adrian and Lyssa very dangerous.
And you had no right to tackle some poor girl in the hall just to soothe your own hurt pride.
Ryan had no right to say those things.
I don't even know what those things are, but unless I've misjudged your age, you're too old to be throwing a tantrum over idle gossip.
Throwing a...
My words fell short as we reached Lyssa working at a table.
Her face and feelings told me trouble was coming. Eddie stood a couple feet away from her, leaning against a wall and watching the room. His eyes widened when he saw me, but he didn't say anything at my approach. I slid into the chair opposite Lissa. "Hey." She looked up and sighed, then returned her attention to the textbook open in front of her.
"I wondered when you'd turn up," she said. "Did you get suspended?" Her words were calm and polite, but I could read her underlying feelings. Annoyed, even a little angry.
"Not this time," I said. "Just got stuck with community service."
She said nothing, but the irate mood I sensed through the bond remained unchanged. Now I sighed. "Okay, talk to me, Liss. I know you're mad." Adrian looked at me, then her, and then me again.
"I feel like I'm missing something here."
"Oh, great," I said. "You went and busted up my fight and didn't even know what it was all about."
"Fight?" asked Lissa, confusion joining her anger. "What happened?" repeated Adrian. I nodded to Lissa.
"Go ahead. Tell him."
Rose got tested earlier and refused to protect Christian. She shook her head, exasperated, and fixed me with an accusatory glare.
"I can't believe you're seriously still mad enough to do something like that to him. It's childish."
Lissa had jumped to the same conclusions as the Guardians. I sighed.
"I didn't do it on purpose. I just sat through a whole hearing on this crap and told them the same thing."
"Then what happened?" she demanded. "Why did you do it?" I hesitated, unsure what to say. My reluctance to talk didn't even have anything to do with Adrian and Eddie overhearing, though I certainly didn't want them to. The problem was more complex. Dimitri had been right. There were people I could trust, and two of them I trusted unconditionally. Him and Lissa. I'd already held back from telling him the truth. Would I, could I, do the same with her? Although she was mad, I knew without a doubt that Lissa would always support me and be there for me. But just like with Dimitri, I balked at the idea of telling my ghost story. Also, just like with Dimitri, it left me in the same bind, crazy or incompetent. Through our bond, I felt her mind pure and clear. There was no taint, no darkness or sign of madness, and yet something tingled in the background. A slight stirring. Antidepressants took a while to fully get into and out of one system, but her magic was already waking up after one day. I thought back to my ghostly encounters, dredging up the memory of that sad, translucent Mason. How could I even begin to explain that to her? How could I bring up something as weird and fantastic as that when she'd been trying so hard to get a little normality in her life and now faced the challenge of getting her magic under control? No, I realized. I couldn't tell her. Not yet, especially when it suddenly occurred to me that there was still something else big I needed to let her know about. "I froze," I said finally. "It's stupid. I'd been so cocky about being able to take out anyone and then Stan..." I shrugged. "I don't know. I just couldn't react. It's really embarrassing. And him, of all people." Lissa studied me intently, looking for any sign of dishonesty. It hurt to think that she'd mistrust me, except, well, I was actually lying. As I told Dimitri, though, I could be a good liar when I wanted to be. Lissa couldn't tell.
"I wish I could read your mind," she mused.
"Come on," I said. "You know me. Do you really think I'd do this? Abandon Christian and make myself look stupid on purpose just to get back at my teachers?"
"No," she said finally.
"You'd probably do it in a way where you wouldn't get caught." "Dimitri said the same thing," I grumbled. "I'm glad everyone has so much faith in me."
"We do," she countered. "That's why all of this is so weird.
Even I make mistakes.
I put on my brash, overconfident face. I know it's hard to believe. Kind of surprises me myself. But I guess it has to happen. It's probably some kind of karmatic way to balance out the universe. Otherwise, it wouldn't be fair to have one person so full of awesomeness.
Adrian, blessedly silent for a change, was watching the two of us talk, much as one would look back and forth at a tennis match. His eyes were narrowed slightly, and I suspected he was studying our auras. Lissa rolled her eyes, but fortunately, the anger I'd felt earlier lightened. She believed me. Her gaze then lifted from my face to someone beyond me. I felt the happy, golden emotions that signaled Christian's presence.
"My loyal bodyguard returns," he declared, pulling up a chair. He glanced at Lissa. "Are you done yet?"
"Done with what?" she asked. He inclined his head toward me.
"Giving her a hard time about how she threw me into the deadly clutches of Alto."
Lissa blushed. She was already feeling a little bad about jumping on me, now that I'd defended myself sufficiently. Christian's flippant, knowing observation just made her feel more foolish. "We were just talking about it, that's all." Adrian yawned and slouched back in his chair.
"Actually, I think I've figured it all out. This was a scam, wasn't it? A scam to scare me off since I'm always talking about you being my guardian. You thought if you pretended to be a bad guardian, I wouldn't want you. Well, it's not going to work, so there's no point in risking anyone else's life."
I was grateful he didn't mention the incident in the hall. Ryan had absolutely been out of line, but as more time passed, it became harder and harder for me to believe I'd snapped like that. It was like something that had happened to someone else, something that I'd simply been watching. Of course, I seemed to be snapping over everything lately. I'd been mad about getting Christian, mad about the Guardian's accusation, mad about... Oh, right. It was probably time for me to drop the bomb.
"So, there's something you guys should know."
Four sets of eyes, even Eddie's, turned to me.
"What's wrong?" asked Lissa. There was really no easy way to tell them, so I just pushed forward.
"Well, it turns out that Victor Dashkov was never found guilty of what he did to us. He's just been locked up. But they're finally going to have an official trial in another week or so." Lissa's reaction to hearing his name was similar to mine. Shock shot through the bond, followed immediately by fear. A slideshow of images flashed through her mind, the way Victor's sick game had made her question her sanity, the torture his henchmen had subjected her to, the bloody state she'd found Christian in after he'd been attacked by Victor's hounds. She clenched her fists on the table, knuckles going white. Christian couldn't sense her reaction the way I could, but he didn't need to. He moved his hand over hers. She barely noticed.
But...
She took a deep, steadying breath, fighting to stay calm. How could he not be guilty already? Everyone knows. They all saw.
It's the law. They supposedly have to give him a fighting chance.
There was confusion all over her, and slowly she came to the same realization that I had last night with Dimitri.
So wait, are you saying there's a chance they might not find him guilty?
I looked into her wide, frightened eyes and couldn't bring myself to tell her. Apparently, my face said it all. Christian slammed his fist against the table.
"This is bullshit!"
Several people at other tables glanced over at his outburst.
"This is politics," said Adrian. "People in power never have to play by the same rules."
"But he nearly killed Rose and Christian," cried Lissa. "And he kidnapped me. How can there be any question?"
Lissa's emotions were all over the place. Fear, sorrow, anger, outrage, confusion, helplessness. I didn't want her delving into those dark feelings and hoped desperately that she'd grow calm again.
Slowly, steadily, she did. But then I started getting angry again. It was like Ryan all over.
"It's a formality, I'm sure," said Adrian. "When all the evidence is in, there probably isn't going to be much of a debate."
"That's the thing," I said bitterly. "They're not going to have all the evidence. We're not allowed to go."
"What?" exclaimed Christian. "Then who's testifying?"
"The other guardians who were there. We apparently can't be trusted to keep the whole thing quiet. The Queen doesn't want the world to know that one of her precious royals might have done something wrong."
Lyssa didn't seem to take offense at me trashing royals.
"But we're the reason he's on trial."
Christian stood up, glancing around as though Victor might be in the library.
"I'm going to take care of this right now."
"Sure," said Adrian.
"I bet going in there and kicking down the door will change their minds. Take Rose with you, and you guys will make a really good impression."
"Yeah?" asked Christian, clenching the back of his chair and fixing Adrian with a stormy glare.
"You have a better idea?"
Lyssa's calmness began to waver again.
"If Victor was free, would he come after us again?"
"If he gets loose again, he won't stay that way for long," I said. "I'll make sure of it."
"Careful there," said Adrian. He seemed to find all of this funny.
"Even you couldn't get away with a royal assassination."
I started to tell him that I'd practice on him first, but then Eddie's sharp voice interrupted my thoughts.
"Rose?"
Instinct, born from years of training, instantly kicked into place. I looked up and immediately saw what he'd noticed. Emil had just entered the library and was scanning for novices, taking notes. I shot up out of my chair, taking a position not far from Eddie that gave me a view of Christian and most of the library. Damn it, I had to get a grip, or I'd end up proving Ryan right. Between my brawl in the hall and now this Victor thing, I was completely neglecting my guardian duties. I might not even need Mason to fail this. Emil hadn't seen me sitting and socializing. He strolled by, glanced at us, and made a few notes before heading off to scout the rest of the library. Relieved at escaping my close call, I tried to gain control of myself. It was hard. The black mood had seized me again, and listening to Lyssa and Christian rage over Victor's trial wasn't really helping me relax. I wanted to go over there and weigh in. I wanted to yell and rant and share my own frustration. But that wasn't a luxury I had as a guardian. My first duty was to protect Maroi and not give in to my own impulses. Over and over, I repeated the guardian mantra, "They come first." Those words were really starting to annoy me. Chapter 7. When the first warning for curfew came around, the Maroi packed their things up. Adrian took off right away, but Lyssa and Christian took their time walking back to the dorm. They held hands and kept their heads close together, whispering about something that I could have spied on if I'd gone inside Lyssa's head. They were still outraged over the Victor news. I gave them their privacy and kept my distance, scouting while Eddie walked off to their side. Since there were more Maroi than Dampiers on campus, the Maroi actually had two side-by-side dorms. Lyssa and Christian lived in different ones. The two of them stopped when they came to the spot outside the buildings where the path through the quad split. They kissed goodbye, and I did my best to do the guardian seeing without actually seeing thing. Lyssa called goodbye to me and then headed off to her dorm with Eddie. I followed Christian to his. If I'd been guarding Adrian or someone like him, I would probably have had to put up with sexual jokes about us sleeping near each other for the next 6 weeks. But Christian treated me in the casual, brusque way one might a sister. He cleared a spot on the floor for me, and by the time he returned from brushing his teeth, I'd made myself a cozy bed out of blankets. He flipped off the lights and climbed into his own bed. After several quiet moments, I asked, "Christian?"
"This is the time when we sleep, Rose."
I yawned.
Believe me, I want that too. But I have a question.